Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray@rte.ie. I don't know why I sound so chirpy, because I woke up this morning with a crick in my neck. A crick in my neck. I tell you, it's either the Den's fault, as in Zig and Zag and Dustin, or Mary McAleese. Yeah, yeah, it's one or the other. I don't know which, because I did some moves on Sunday live on television that I haven't done sober in, I don't know, 30 years. It's either that, or it's the fact that I'm reading Mary McAleese's book at the moment, and it's a heavy hardback thing, and you have to adjust your position in the bed, because I read at night in bed. And maybe last night I just had the neck and the head in the wrong place, and as a result I woke up this morning with a crick in my neck. I used to think it was a creak, but it's a crick, C-R-I-C-K. A sort of a stiffness and a soreness, the lower part of the neck into the shoulders. They're a pain in the neck. Pain in the neck. I'm sure there are people out there who can offer up old wives' cures for a crick in the neck. And somebody shouting, "I always knew you were a pain in the neck, Darcy." Yeah, I suppose you're right. So I went online, as you do now, because you can Google everything, can't you? About 15% of cases of neck stiffness are caused by underlying medical problems. So I've ruled that out. And they say that crick in the neck can be temporary or chronic. It is often painless, but may be connected to the chronic neck or shoulder pain. And it says just rest, it goes away. There's not much you can do about it. But if you have any old wives' cures for it, please do pass them on. And speaking of cures and things medical, what about the announcement yesterday of a vaccine for COVID-19? Excuse the pun, because it is intended. It's the shot in the arm that we all needed. And we have Professor Luke O'Neill on today, and he'll be answering questions about, you know, who will get it first, when we will get it, who has paid for it already, will there be other ones, how does it work, all those things. And if you have any specific questions about the announcement yesterday that you want to put to Luke O'Neill, get them into us, 51551 ray@rte.ie. It's about 3 or 4 years ago that I was first introduced to T-cells. We had a man from Ireland who had moved to Australia, and he had cancer, and he offered himself up for clinical trials, a new form of therapy called immunotherapy, where they take cells out of your body, they re-engineer them, and then they inject them back into your body. And the advantage of all this was, or is, that they're targeted. So a lot of cancer treatments, they just wipe out everything. And that's why chemotherapy is such a horrible thing to go through. But this immunotherapy, this T-cell therapy, targets the cancer. And as a result, has a less negative effect on the body, and it's a lot more focused. And I see that the physicians, Ugur Sahin and his wife Uzlem Turici, who developed the vaccine for BioNTech, which is their own company, and Pfizer, who are obviously a partner company with the whole thing, when he heard about this time last year or thereabouts, when he heard about the development of a virus in Wuhan in China, he thought that a way of developing a vaccine might be to reimagine the T-cell treatment that was been used in cancer. And that's why we're here today. And that's why when you picked up the papers this morning, you saw this good news. Now, it'll take a number of months, and we shouldn't really change our behaviour. That's the important thing. I've heard a number of people say that. We shouldn't change our behaviour as a result of that announcement, because we still need to be vigilant. We still need to keep social distance, wash our hands, all of those things for a number of months to come, or else we will have more spikes in the graph. But it is good news, and Luke O'Neill will be along and he'll answer your questions, which is great. Living together. And it's the little things, isn't it? It's the little things that annoy people. And I see there on Twitter or some social media platform that a wife has shared her husband's annoying bathroom habit, and hundreds have sympathised with her. She shared a simple picture of the way her husband hangs up his wet towel after shower. You always put it into the laundry basket, don't you? Do you? That's what I always do. Just for fear that you leave it hanging in the wrong position or on the floor or anything like that. So it's always in the laundry basket. And if I forget to do that, you'll find out about it. So She posted a picture on Facebook showing the towel rack in the bathroom and her towel neatly draped over one end and her husband's thrown on the other end, bunched up over the other side. So he hadn't placed it in the laundry basket. He hadn't folded it. He'd just thrown it there. How dare he? How dare he? See, it's the little things. It's the socks. Yes, the socks left on the floor. Or the movement of things. There's another thing that might annoy people. You know, because you leave something down and you expect it to be there when you go back. I know it mightn't be the right place to put it, but you expect to find it there when you go back. And sometimes it isn't there because it's been moved in some sort of tidy up routine, which is great, which is brilliant, but you can't find it. And then if the person isn't there and then you ring them to ask where it might be and they might say, how do you expect me to know? And then, you know, so these sort of things happen. It's all part of navigating a relationship and marriage and all that sort of thing. But it's fun and rewarding. So what annoys you about your partner? And keep it small. Socks and towels, please. Not the big stuff. Socks and towels and that sort of thing. Might be the way they eat their pasta. It could be the way they stack the dishwasher. Yeah, yeah. All of those things. Little things, little things. 51551 ray@rte.ie. We got an email to ray@rte.ie from Eldon Connor. He's originally from Santry in Dublin. He's now living in San Anselmo, California, just north of San Francisco. He moved to the Bay Area in 1999 for a two-week holiday and happily never left. And even though he has an amazing big family still living on the north side of Dublin, Santry, I usually got to travel back a couple of times a year to see them all. Unfortunately, not in 2020. Anyway, during the start of the lockdown in March, I started using an app called Radio Garden. It's pretty cool. It lets you listen to radio stations all over the world. And sure enough, I stumbled across RTÉ Radio 1 and your show here at 7 o'clock in the morning, just when I'm going to work. So for the last 7 months, I've been checking it out. Helps me keep up with so many things that are going on around the country. Even turned my new English girlfriend, Sarah, onto it also. Loved the page from my life book and ordered a copy of it the other day. Grew up watching The Den and thought it was great. I'm presently sitting watching The New Den and think it's frickin' hilarious. And if I could make a song request, would you please play Hooked on a Feeling by Blue Swede? We might include that today for Eldon Connor. And just on a page of my life, the numbers are in for this week and we're top of the non-fiction books again. So that's brilliant for the 150 contributors. And it's also brilliant for Laura Lynn because a minimum of €3 from every sale of every book goes to Laura Lynn. So keep that going. Keep that going. And we're delighted to be involved in that. And hello to Eldon. It's mad to think that people are listening to it at 7 o'clock in the morning because we don't gear our show towards a 7 o'clock in the morning audience. We gear it towards a mid-afternoon audience when the atmosphere is quite different. But there you go. Shuan has been on. She watched The Den with her 10-year-old twin boys. Four of them laughed solidly for the hour. So there's obviously Shun's partner involved there who isn't mentioned. And Nick, age 71, thoroughly enjoyed an hour of madness, taking our minds away from the world around us. That's the thing that's really taken me aback this time round. It's people 65, 69, 71, 82, all tuning into The Den and enjoying it. And that's brilliant. That's really encouraging. So thanks for all that. And we started our review of the new calendars last week and we got calendar number 2 in today. And it's a lovely one and it's an aid of St. Vincent de Paul and it's the work of Matt Brooker and his wife Mary brings our attention to it. They're from, is it Ballymadog? I've never heard of Ballymadog. B-A-L-L-Y-M-A-D-O-G. Is that how you pronounce that? Ballymadog? Yall, County Cork. Please enclose calendar, which my husband Matt Brooker put together for the St. Vincent de Paul. He has fine-tuned his photography skills during lockdown. He's already raised over 5,000 from the sales of the calendar locally. And you can buy it online, mattbrookerphotography.com. And it's a lovely, it's a really lovely big calendar. And Matt's obviously has an eye and a talent. And there's some lovely beaches and some lovely vistas around where he lives in Yall. And they're all captured there in that 2021 calendar. So well done. Well done, Matt. Just on The Den as well. If you missed it on Sunday, it's on tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock on RT2. I don't know how that's going to work out, seeing as it was very much live. But if you missed it, 7 o'clock tomorrow evening on RT2. Now, crick in the neck. I got to remember getting that in school one time. I couldn't look left or right for 2 days without turning my whole body around. People didn't believe me. And it makes you feel about 20 years older than you are, doesn't it? It's that sort of thing. I'm doing it here. Yeah, a hot water bottle and rest. Your only man, and get a heat pack for the neck. Wonderful, says Martin. And you need an over-the-bed table with a bookrest. Ah, now what's that? You'll have to draw a picture for me. An old wives' tale, a bit of goose grease for a crick in the neck. Yeah, are you serious? They won't let me put deep heat on muscular problems at home because they hate the smell of it. I sort of like the smell of deep heat for some reason. Chewing loudly and then expecting a kiss. They're bad habits. Oh yeah, these are the bad habits. Empty shampoo bottles left in the shower. Noisy eating, not closing the mouth. The toilet seat left up. Husband reading in bed at night when I'm trying to sleep. Very annoying. Come on, vent. Get it out there. Let me see. There's loads of questions coming in for Luke O'Neill, who we have on later on. We want the Yes No Game Show, and you need to wrestle Ted on the den, says Dylan in Cove. And can you please wish Claire Brown from Raheny a very happy birthday from Angie, John and Sarah in Rocky River, Ohio in the USA. What have I to do now? Oh yeah, the quiz. Where have I got that quiz? It's our quiz of today. Yes. Yeah, you know the deal. Today is the 10th of November. We've cobbled together 10 questions on this particular date from over the years and the centuries and the decades. And we need two people on after 4 o'clock to answer 5 questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets a prize, a lovely prize. We're giving one lucky listener, the winner of the quiz, the chance to win a fantastic weekend break staying at one of the 4 exceptional Irish-owned Flynn hotels located across the country. Yourself and the guests will check in for 2 nights stay with breakfast each morning and dinner on one evening, enjoying superb service, delicious food and all the excellent hotel and leisure facilities on offer. 4 hotels in the Flynn Group: the boutique style Imperial Hotel in Cork City, the New Park Hotel Kilkelly on 40 acres of beautiful parkland, the Old Ground Hotel in the heart of Ennis, or the Park Hotel on the in the scenic harbour town of Dungarvan, County Waterford. And you can find out more at flynnhotels.com. So if you want to win, you want to be involved, you have to answer a qualifying question, which is this: Ireland's highest mountain, Carn Tuil, is in which county? So Carn Tuil is in which county? 1850 715 900. That's 1850 715 900. And good luck with that. 5 on 5 on Red, RTE.ie. Good afternoon. CMAT, another day, and she was on the den on Sunday. And a bright new Irish talent. Great singer and great songwriter too. 5 on 5 on Red, RTE.ie. Things that annoy you about your partner. My husband brushes his teeth in the shower. Now, what's the problem with that? Like, I don't see any problem with that whatsoever. In fact, there are advantages there, because if he does that, he doesn't, you know, there's no toothpaste around the sink or anything like that. The other way, the toothpaste gathers on the sink and leaves that sort of residue. He does it in the shower. That's not going to happen. I think that's an advantage. People who leave all the kitchen cabinets open. Yeah. See why that's a problem. My husband is the love of my life. See, can you, a big B-U-T coming here. But, by God, he's such an authority on everything. He can't help but put his tuppence worth into everything you're doing. I'm laughing because it sounds familiar. Does this sound familiar to you? Do you have to have an opinion on everything? Well, yeah. Going for a pee in the middle of the night, every feckin' night. Bounce it back into bed. Jenny, I told you not to text the programme. Yeah, but that's just comes with age, doesn't it? You have to get up and go for a wee. So keep them coming in. 5 on 5 5 1, Ray at RTE.ie. We'll take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, on the crick, my mother put burnt salt in a nylon stocking. On the crick in the neck, she would put it around the neck. Try it, says Anne in the Midlands. And Tiger Balm is good for a crick. Wear a warm scarf for a couple of days. It helps, says Coit. And Cormac has been on from San Francisco. He says, I listen to your show most mornings at 7 o'clock when I'm getting up, having breakfast and getting ready for work. Seems like the perfect morning show format to me. In fact, when I go back to Dublin to Christmas, it's actually weird hearing you on at 3 in the afternoon. Seems odd. It's Cormac. Well, we go to the United States of America now, because at the start of October, we had the privilege of chatting to Martin Luther King III on the show. It was in the wake of the first presidential debate over there. Martin is the eldest son of civil rights campaigner Martin Luther King Jr. Since we've spoken, obviously a lot has changed, in particular over the weekend, and the United States has a new president-elect. So we say good morning once again to Martin Luther King III from Atlanta. How are you doing, Martin?
I'm doing very well. Very excited about the prospects of a different government, a different commander in chief, and actually really ecstatic about that. And the first black Indian woman vice president-elect. So this is just a very wonderful time, I think, for our nation and really for the world.
Mm. In a way, because of what we've gone through, well, what America's gone through during the last 4 years, the election of Kamala Harris is nearly bigger than the election of Barack Obama.
Well, in a real sense, that is correct. It is in the sense that, as you've stated and as has been stated by some others, we've never had a woman to be elected to either president or vice president. So this is the first woman who really will have an opportunity, I think, not that Hillary Clinton did not, but of course Hillary Clinton unfortunately lost. And but I think Kamala Harris will be in a great position to become the next president after Joe Biden.
So you were watching, obviously, the coverage of the election as it dragged out over a number of days last week. And then finally, when they called the results, what was the reaction in the Luther King household?
Listen, my wife and I have a 12-year-old daughter, as you may know, Yolanda Renee. And this all happened Saturday, of course. Mm. We knew it was heading in that direction, even after by Wednesday or Thursday, we knew we were going to get there. And when we all heard it around the same time, I believe our daughter just jumped up in the air, probably 6 feet. I mean, she was just so happy. And it obviously we were all very happy. And then to see the number of people in the streets, I've never seen, you know, Washington and New York and some of the others. There's certainly a lot of people were very happy about President Obama in 2008. But this was a different kind of energy, because I think we were taken down so low, at least we felt, by the leadership of President Trump. So to know that there's new leadership coming, a team of a man and a woman, it was just amazing. Hmm. Just amazing.
I remember the commentary around Donald Trump and his first few months in office, and he gave division a voice. He allowed people that had been sort of silenced to the margins, because they should be, he allowed them to speak up again. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, white supremacists and people like that. And now Joe Biden is given unifiers a voice, which is great.
That is absolutely a very positive factor. I mean, first of all, we will have in January, on January 20th, a commander in chief who, even if he disagrees with you, he's not going to denigrate you.
Yeah.
What President Trump has consistently done is to denigrate anybody who does not agree with him. And that is very sad. I mean, that's what children do. When you're a child, you do stuff like that. Grown people, adults, mature people, statespersons don't do that. And so it's just a different energy. The whole energy around our nation, and I believe the world, is different. I've talked to several countries and heard the same thing, that we are relieved.
Yes, so, there's a palpable relief in Ireland. And of course, Joe Biden has very strong connections here.
Absolutely.
And it will probably visit during his 4 years in office.
Yes.
But we can't ignore the fact that 71 million people voted for Donald Trump. So he has to bring them along with him. He has to do a lot of healing, doesn't he?
Oh, that is absolutely correct. In fact, that probably is going to be one of his greatest challenges, but it also is one of his greatest strengths as a person. He has, over the years, when he was in the Senate, always been able to reach across the aisle and get things done. In fact, he worked with one who some would say is his nemesis now, which is the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell. He worked with him during the Obama years to get things done. You know, the hope is there's an election, by the way, here in Georgia, which may determine the majority in the Senate so that Mitch McConnell loses his majority. But right. if he does not, President-elect Biden is going to have to work with him as he once did. So he knows how to reach across the aisle. But he's also said in his very first speech, as you heard, that, you know, I am going to be the president for all people. I'm not going to be the president of just blue states, but blue states, red states. I'm going to be the president of America. That means he's willing to listen. And that's really all that you can hope for
yes.
in a president.
And just simple things, like I saw one of the commentators on CNN say, it'd be great to wake up and not dread reaching to Twitter and reading something from, you know, the man in charge of your country who's supposed to be a responsible human being. Like even those small little things.
That makes a dramatic difference. I mean, I think one of the things I heard this morning, which actually in our house and other homes is the same. The mayor of our city was talking about how her kids felt. And that's when she realized just how important Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms. And the same thing with me, because, our daughter had waken up every day and was always just tensed and stressed. And a lot of it is because of what the president is saying. Children feel so much better now because they are not in that kind of fight or flight mentality.
Yes, yeah,
it's a different day.
It's mad because we've an 8-year old, Martin, and you know, at a distance, he was still aware of now, probably because of me and Jenny, my wife, our chat, and they absorb a lot of that. But he was aware of Donald Trump and him being not a very nice person. And he was completely engaged in the presidential election and overjoyed when Joe Biden, like every morning when he woke up last week, he asked, was there a result? Who won? So it's reached this far, which is huge.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a new day, as I said, a new feeling, yeah. a new energy. And, you know, when you look at the fact that the president-elect has said he's going to reenter the climate change accord, when you look at the fact that there are two or three other things, he's going to deal with racism and inequality. These are all different things from what, you know, President Trump has yeah. chosen not to deal with. And so it feels good. It makes people feel. I've never seen people so jubilant as I have for this election cycle. Right. And that does not mean, of course, we're going to ignore those who lost, because it's not about, you know, just defeating your adversaries. It's about finding ways to build a friendship so that we all can move forward together in a positive way.
You were very diplomatic the last time you spoke to us because Donald Trump was still, well, he is still president now, but he won't be for much longer. What do you think his legacy for America is going to be? Is there any positives there?
Well, it depends on from what perspective you're talking about. So, for example, he clearly will have a legacy around shaping the courts. The Supreme Court is, you know, is majority conservative now. And that is a legacy that lasts long past him. I'm not sure what else, you know, I think.
Is that a positive? It needs to be seen, I suppose.
It's hard to determine. If, okay. for example, today the courts are looking at the Affordable Care Act, if they choose to take a position to dismantle it, there's 20 million people who will have no health care. That's negative.
Right.
But if they choose to maintain, you know, there are also issues around women's rights, and it depends on what way the court goes. So it can be positive or negative. Obviously, because we're divided, for some it's positive, for some it's negative.
It's negative, yeah. We spoke the last time you were on about your dad a lot and how he would see the America of 2020. So how would he see the result of this election, do you think?
He would see, I think, this election as the beginning of a very significant change. But again, you know, the political system has to be pushed. And even President-elect Biden is going to have to find ways to bring even the Democrats together, because you've got a very progressive number of Democrats who are winning, and they're being accused of causing the Democrats not to win more seats, because in the House, as you know, the Democrats lost seats, and the Senate is not determined yet, but there were several seats that were thought that were going to be won. So I think again, this is the beginning of, this is a huge, a monumental step, but it's not the the realization at this point. This is where we begin. But I think we're going to do some, I think that President-elect Biden and Vice President-elect Harris are going to do some great things for our nation.
You would like to see, I would imagine you and your family and you know, black people across America would like to see Kamala Harris take a very upfront role as vice president.
Well, yes. And I think she will to some degree. You know, the president, you, as we see, you know, every president, unless he or she abdicates a little bit of a responsibility, the president makes the decisions in consultation with the vice president often. But, you know, Vice President Pence, I'm sure there are things that he probably didn't agree with President Trump on, but the president is the president. Yeah. And that's the way it's going to work. The president's going to be the president. And the vice president will probably have a complimentary role.
But her speech on Saturday evening, and particularly to girls, young girls around America,
yes,
that must have hit home with Yolanda, your 12-year-old.
Oh, my God. Oh, absolutely. Her and millions of girls around the nation and the world. Again, as I said, we all sat and watched the speech. We couldn't wait until 8 o'clock when it actually was 8:30 or so when it came on. But we were just waiting with bated breath and anticipation. And it was just so wonderful. But to be able to sleep at night in calm, not thinking you're going to wake up, even though we know that, you know, the president is still going to be tweeting stuff until for the next 72 days, but it just feels so much better knowing.
I was saying there's a strong connection between President-elect Joe Biden and Ireland, and it's just been confirmed because our Taoiseach, our Prime Minister, Micheál Martin, has beaten Boris Johnson, and it appears every other European leader to speak to the new President-elect of the United States. He's just tweeted, this is Micheál Martin, in the last 10 minutes, that he's just off the phone with Joe Biden. So there you go. A couple of questions for you there. Do the American presidents reach out to the Luther King family? Like, did you meet Trump? Will you meet Biden, do you think?
Yes, but we certainly will be engaged. I certainly did not attempt. We met on the day before President Trump was inaugurated on issues. And obviously he had no concern about those issues because we never were called back to really further talk about how we could move forward on that issue. It happened to be around voter suppression and voting rights. That's what we were meeting on. And but there never was any engagement. I certainly believe with President-elect Biden, there's going to be significant engagement. Okay. There are a number of issues that we expect to be talking to him about.
They're saying here, remember Hillary Clinton once called Trump supporters deplorable, so much for unity. There are 70 million people who voted for him this time. I suppose that's in the past. I think Biden will be all great speeches like Obama with no action. Trump was a clown, but at least he got things done and put more money in people's pockets, says that person. And I saw his daughter, that's your daughter, Martin, make a great speech. We played a bit of it actually the last time we were on. Do you think she'll go into politics? Do you have a quiet moment thinking that your daughter could one day be the president of the United States of America?
Well, first of all, I am biased, as all parents are, and I believe we believe our daughter can do anything she chooses to. Now, as to whether or not she will choose politics, I don't know at this point. It's too early to tell. I know that she's going to be engaged in an activist way at a minimum, but it could revolve to politics. It's very possible.
All right. Thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today, Martin Luther King III, and we'll speak to you in the future again.
All right. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or ray@rte.ie. This week is Science Week, and tonight on RTE 1 at 7 o'clock, the first episode of Future Island is on. It's on tonight, tomorrow night and Thursday night, 7 o'clock for an hour live. It'll curate, I love that word, curate Ireland's most exciting and inspirational stories and voices into a family-friendly celebration of our nation's experts and innovators. That's the pitch. The show is presented by Liz Bonin and co-presenting, I suppose, is Professor Luke O'Neill, and he's on the line now. How are you doing, Luke?
How's it going, Ray? Lovely to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too. Now, yourself and Liz Bonin go way back.
We do indeed, yeah. Liz was a biochemistry student. I won't say how long ago, not to embarrass her. Right. But she was one of our brightest students, honest to God. And then she was going to do a PhD and all kinds of things, but the world of showbiz took her away from us. But of course, she's a great scientist now on the BBC, and has seen her. Big environmentalist. So it's fantastic to meet her again. I haven't seen her in a few years.
We're going to talk to her tomorrow, and I'm going to remind her about her past as well, her showbiz past, because she was in a girl band as well as been a TV presenter. Did you know that?
She asked me, right, honest to God, should I go for the girl band or a PhD? I said, go for the girl band.
Of course, you're into music as well. It's probably you're living your life vicariously through her.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. So tonight, tomorrow night, and Thursday night, it's live and it's scientific, and you'll be in your element, Luke O'Neill.
I will. I mean, you wouldn't believe it, Ray. I'm excited to be here at the Explorium. That's where it's coming from. We've been doing some rehearsing and all kinds of things. It is a fantastic three shows ahead of us. I mean, tonight we've Brian O'Driscoll. Can you believe it, Ray? He's coming in, and they're going to feed him some weird and wonderful foods. And it'll be about the science of nutrition and what have you. You know, so you never know what's going to happen to him. And then we've got a fantastic inspirational piece about different scientists who've done great things. A thing called the Memory Haven app, invented by Irish scientists for Alzheimer's disease. Mark Pollock, you may have heard of Mark.
Yeah, I know Mark.
On Operation Walk, but very importantly, it's a bit of fun as well. We've got Foil Arms and Hogs. They're here as well. I've been laughing my head off all day at them, actually. So it really is about entertainment. We're hoping, Ray, this will be what normal people did for drama in lockdown. This will do for science in our current lockdown. You know, we're hoping people will watch in their droves, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's a great team there, just yourself and Liz. And then I know you'll have loads of other scientists along with you over the three nights, and it's live. And there's comedy as well. PJ Gallagher is there. I see his name mentioned as well.
Yep.
So 7 o'clock tonight, RTE1, and tomorrow night and Thursday night. Now, I saw you on the news last night. Yesterday was a big day. In this year of 2020, because Pfizer and BioNTech announced that they have a vaccine for COVID-19 that is 90% effective.
Yep.
Will you put that in perspective for people?
I will indeed. It's an amazing week for science, let's face it. This is Science Week, as you said earlier. And now tonight, we'll have a long discussion on this vaccine, because it's really tremendous. Right? If it holds up, of course,
yes.
The caveats are with a press release. We don't normally look at science through press releases. Still, they must be confident, right? They've said 90% efficacy. What that means is it will decrease your risk of catching COVID-19 by 90%. Now, again, we're waiting for the data. We'll have to chew over it and so on. But by God, it's a good step, Ray, in the right direction, tell you that much. So we're all very, very excited about this.
And not only is it exciting for what we're going through at the moment, but it's exciting for future generations, because this is new technology in the fight against viruses. So this amazing couple, Ugur Sahin and Uzlem Turici, I'm just pretending that that's how you pronounce their names, I don't know if it is, they looked at treatment that's been used to treat cancer, and they said, we might be able to use that to vaccine against virus. So we'll explain that to us.
Well, exactly. It's a brand new technology, as you said, Ray, and if it works for COVID-19, you could maybe make a vaccine against many diseases where we haven't got vaccines.
Yes.
Now, it could even be things like malaria, you know, for example. There's still no proper vaccine for malaria, for example. You know, you never know. Right? Even the common cold, incredibly, might be vaccinated against. It's in the same family as this one. And there is a chance to have vaccines for cancer. So you never know. Pfizer seems to have cracked it. And if it all works out, of course.
Yes.
Pfizer have invented a really interesting technology. Now, Moderna are a second company. They have a very similar technology. So in other words, that's a second vaccine. So this bodes well for the Moderna vaccine too. So you never know. Before Christmas, you might have two vaccines.
It's odd, because it's only in the last 10 years or so that you use the word technology around medicine. It wasn't a word that was used around medicine before, was it?
And it's true.
Yeah, and now you're using terminology like re-engineering cells.
It's funny.
Is there a bit of re-engineering in this one?
Well, there is. It's a really, again, the dreaded word technology, it's an innovative approach. They're using this RNA, which is a bit different from other vaccines. The way they deliver it, we use the word delivery, get it into the body, is a bit different. So they are using very clever techniques here, I suppose. And they had to, Ray, because it's, you know, previous attempts to vaccinate against the common cold had failed. So there was no point in trying to do the same old thing, you know. So Pfizer came along, and BioNTech, as you said, they're the German. They got it from Germany, to be honest. It was licensed from a German company. And now, you never know. I mean, talk about having your fingers crossed. What's happened, Ray, in a sense, is they themselves are blown away by the efficacy.
Right.
They were expecting maybe 60%. And they're saying it's hit 90, so it exceeds their expectations, hence the excitement.
So you, it needs to be peer-reviewed, and people like yourself need to see the safety data. As you say, it was only delivered in a press release, which is not the norm for scientific breakthroughs, but we're in unprecedented times. I'm just, how would you describe it to a 10-year-old? Is it like, I was trying to put it, because I have an 8-year-old, I want to explain it to him when I go home this evening. Is it that you prepare the body with little soldiers that are ready to ambush the virus when it enters your body? Is that it?
Exactly. It's a piece of the virus, a tiny piece of the virus. You inject it into the body and you train the troops, you see, to recognize that piece of virus.
Right.
So when the bad virus comes along, the troops can recognize it. It's a bit like putting up wanted posters in the old cowboy movies, you know? Yeah. The wanted posters are up and now the bad guy arrives and you kill it. That's what this vaccine does, you see. So that's really a good analogy.
So in the other vaccines, just to keep this analogy going, would have been you would have let some of the baddies in, and the troops would have trained themselves to sort of, the body would have trained itself that in the future, if they arrived, they knew that there were baddies, and that's
exactly. So and this is the best trainer ever. I mean, the way to think of it is this vaccine really trains the immune system.
Right.
Is the idea, you know, and now you've got a fantastic lethal force.
Yeah.
Ready to fight the damned enemy when the enemy arrives.
So it'll be two doses. So when we hear of 2 million, say, coming into Ireland, is that for 1 million people or is that for 2 million people? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, 1 million.
One million people.
Sadly,
okay.
But right. Remember, Ray, they're going to make 1.4 billion doses by sort of February, March of next year will be available. That's a fifth of the world's population, remember, so it's incredible.
Okay.
And then can you imagine if the Moderna vaccine works as well?
Yes,
that's a second supplier. Now we're up to 3-4 billion doses, you know, and the Vista's even better then, you know?
Okay, I'm sort of naturally cautious. Is there anything that can happen is there any banana skin that we're not...
Yep. We must be careful. Yeah, we don't. I mean, you think I'm jumping up and down? It sounds like that, but we have to be careful because first of all, is it as good as they say? Companies can sometimes release press releases, and it isn't quite as good when you see the real thing. You know.
Yeah.
So now I suspect that's not the case here because if the head of Pfizer has got it wrong, there'll be egg on his face for life. You know. So let's hope he's telling us the way it is. Now the safety. We haven't seen the full safety data yet. That will take about 2 weeks, and then we're going to know if it's really safe. Signs are good, right? Because it didn't stop the trial.
I
remember other trials were stopped. This one wasn't stopped.
Yes.
So that's a good sign.
I like the cut of his jib, the head of Pfizer, because he came out earlier on when Donald Trump was trying to use the development of a vaccine as a political football, and he sort of set the record straight. And he told people that he would make an announcement in November, which he has. So I think he's a man of his word.
I think he is.
Yeah. Now, the problem is, of course, that... Everybody, like, and I'm talking about my 8-year-old son included, everybody has been waiting for this vaccine. So never before in the history of the development of a vaccine have so many eyes been focused on it. And that's maybe a negative because people are probably going to be more reluctant to take it, are they? Because
they might. Yeah. I mean, it's called vaccine hesitancy. It's well known, by the way.
Right.
Even when the first vaccine was invented, smallpox was the first. There was already hesitancy because people are anxious. You know, you're sticking a needle in an arm, and then there are stories of things going wrong and so on. So the next challenge, Ray, is to roll it out. We must get to 70% vaccination of the population to make sure we can beat this virus. Now, the question is, how do you convince people? There was a survey today, though, 57% said they would take it in the right direction, you know, and that'll be the government and the HSC will roll out a campaign. They do it anyway, the flu, you know, there's a vaccine there. So we need to be clever with this one, I think, because it is new and there will be anxieties, you know.
Yeah, so I suppose they'll be picking your brain and people like you. What would you suggest? Like, you know, would you take it? I was reading there that back in the day, they got Elvis to take the polio vaccine.
Yeah,
because he was a role model for young people at the time. And there was a bit of, what do you call it, vaccination hesitancy.
Yeah.
So will you take it?
I'd take it now. Right?
Yeah.
I would volunteer for the trial, you know. No, I mean, if the FDA in America, they're the governing body that looks at safety and efficacy, and the EMA in Europe, if they both sign off on this vaccine, everybody should take it. That's the bottom line, because they've looked at it really, really closely and decided this is safe, this is efficacious. Now, how do you convince people? That people respond to emotion. Right? So, for example, in the 70s, the measles vaccine, Roald Dahl was the guy who encouraged people for that one, for example. You know? Now, nowadays, we'd probably need Niall Horan or Hozier or someone. I don't know. Maybe Saoirse Ronan.
The three of them together. There you go.
Yeah, the three of them.
Yeah, you see, I hope they will be ringing you and asking for advice, because just there now, off the top of your head, you've come up with something.
You've come
up with a campaign.
A campaign, exactly. It's never a shame, right? Imagine all this effort and then the vaccine is used.
You have to get 70% of the population to take it. And is that everybody or just adult population?
Adults initially, exactly. Okay. See, children, as you know, with this virus, children aren't especially a source of spread.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to worry about them. That's not like measles, which does kids spread like wildfire, you know. With this one, you'll start with the healthcare workers, of course, first and foremost, then the vulnerable, the older people. One prediction that Pfizer have made, right, is every nursing home will be given vaccines, you see. So we start to protect the older population next, you know, and then gradually we roll it out more generally.
Right. We don't know about the timeline, you know, for Ireland, for example. We're part of an EU deal, are we?
We are. The EU has already bought 200 million doses in total, and they would give that out pro rata based on the number of healthcare workers and older people initially. So we should get our share of that 200 million and then keep the order book going, I suppose. You know, and then if the next company comes up, we order, the EU order some off them. So it's very much a case of getting as much as we can, as quick as we can.
Just to go back a little bit, would you be in favour of the vaccine being mandatory?
That's a tricky one, right? You're much better off to make a consensus view on vaccines. I mean, what they've done in the past is you don't make it against the law, you exclude people. So one prediction here is you cannot travel unless you have the vaccine. And that would incentivize people. That's a better way to do it, I think.
And congratulations on the success of your company. So you'll probably be able to answer this question then. What were the deals made between the European Union and Pfizer and the American government and Pfizer? What way did that work?
A lot of haggling, honest to God, you wouldn't believe it. Now, remember, the US government and the European Union have given money to vaccine companies. They haven't given Pfizer money. Pfizer stayed independent, interestingly, from this. But Johnson & Johnson, Sanofi, were all given money by the governments because, of course, there's a big need here, you know, and it's sort of a public-private partnership. I think. Now, that makes the pricing a bit simpler, right? Because, obviously, if you've given the company money up front, you shouldn't have to pay for the damn thing, you know. So, so the prediction is it should be free. I mean, even Pfizer have said they'll make the first year or so potentially. They haven't specified yet, mind you, but I reckon it'll be free for the first phase of all this.
And will that be a new phase as well? Because I've been saying this for years, that there should be more public-private partnerships in the development of drugs to cure diseases.
Yes, that's a really good point, and you don't see it as much. That's a really good point, right, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, this is the first example of a huge public-private partnership, again, because of the economic crisis that's happening and all this. But we should see more of that, really, exactly, for any drug, if the truth be told.
Okay, it's the quick-fire round, Luke, because we said you were coming on. So here we go. Will you take the vaccine? You've answered that already. Can you ask Luke a question for my 12-year-old daughter? She wants to know if they'll be able to push their tables back together in their classroom soon, since we think we have a vaccine. Thank you. I suppose that's the bigger question is, when do you see us returning to some sort of normal?
We've got to hold out. It's very hard to say, of course. We're reluctant to put a date on it. But certainly by next summer, let me put that on record, we should be in a much better place.
Yeah.
And that means that governments can start to relax restrictions. Now, it'll be a slow enough process. We're calling it vaccine plus as the latest buzz, right? In other words, you'll still have to wear your mask and keep this, because it'll take a while to roll the thing out, you know. But certainly, let's hope by next June, July, things begin to look a bit brighter for us all.
Okay. How effective will a vaccine be if the virus mutates and spreads again like the minks in Denmark?
Yeah, we're less worried about that. That's probably a one-off, we hope, that minks story. It needs to be looked at closely, of course, but still, I wouldn't be too worried for the moment. It's a pretty stable virus, actually. It doesn't mutate that much, you know. So again, and by the way, Pfizer can modify their vaccine quite quickly if a new one did come along, you know. So that's still a possibility.
That's the engineering part of it, the technology part of it again, yes.
Precisely.
Yeah, can you please ask Luke if the new vaccine will be effective for animals too? I suppose that's Stephen in the last 11.
What, like for mink? It would be, many vaccines work in animals as much as in humans, you know, so that would be a possibility.
On hearing, the vaccine has to be stored at a very low temperature. That's one of the things, isn't it? How will this work in surgeries and pharmacies? Sean asks.
Yeah, Pfizer are all over that, right, already. Now, it turns out it's an RNA vaccine. This thing called RNA is the basis for the vaccine. That's a very unstable one. That goes off quite quick. You can leave it on your kitchen or whatever to go off. You got to keep it very cold. Now, Pfizer,
How cold, Luke?
Well, you store it at minus 80. Can you believe that?
Right. So your domestic fridge isn't going to work.
No, but it would be reasonably kept in that fridge for hours and hours.
Okay,
you know?
Right.
So one prediction is it'll be in a minus 8. The Pfizer has fitted out special vans already, right, to ship this around. A single van will carry 7 million doses. Isn't that incredible?
Wow.
At minus 80. So a single van could vaccinate Ireland, if you think about it.
We want one of those vans tomorrow, Luke.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in the GP surgery, he'll put it, he or she, in their freezer to keep it for a few days, that kind of thing. So there's ways...
That was the next question. Do you think it's going to be delivered through GPs or something different?
It'll be like the flu vaccine.
Right, okay.
And even pharmacies might play a role. It'll be pharmacies, most likely GPs initially, because it's a new vaccine.
Okay.
They'll keep an eye on things, you know, and then pharmacies as well.
Yeah. And there's the other question. When will life be normal? When can I go to Coppers and get a shift again? there's an air of desperation there.
There is an air of desperation. I'd never go to Coppers. That's a bad place. One day in our future, Coppers will be back
and you'll be snugging the face off someone. Can you tell Luke O'Neill he's just wonderful? Every time I see or hear him, his enthusiasm and love of science is infectious. I hope many of our young students follow in his footsteps. Sinead in Dublin 18. That's a lovely way to finish up.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
So Future Ireland tonight. Professor Luke O'Neill, Liz Bonin. It's on the telly. 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and again tomorrow night and Thursday night, and it promises to be a great celebration of science and very informative too. Luke, thanks so much.
Thanks, Ray.
Mind yourself. See you. Bye. Bye.
Thanks a lot.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or 51551 for your text. Mick's been on to say, love listening to Luke O'Neill. He has a way of keeping us all calm. Proud Pres Bray past pupil. And on Martin Luther King III, what a well-adjusted and articulate man he is. The United States could do with a few more like him. I'm sure there are millions of people like him in the States. Unfortunately, they don't hold positions of power in a lot of cases. Marie's been on. She says, I'm listening to you in Houston, Texas. Houston, we have a problem. And Joe Duffy beforehand. I knew somebody who had a crick in their neck recently and she used a neck heat pad and it worked very well. Thank you for that. And we were talking about bad habits. My wife lets the tap run just to wash a spoon, like for 2 minutes. Drives me mad. When he is making a sandwich and he takes stuff out and leaves it out, bread on the counter, butter tub open for me to tidy up. He's a great man, though. Weeing in the downstairs loo with the door open, shoveling granola directly from the packet from Anonymous, for obvious reasons. And there are more bad habits. And keep them coming in, 51551. Anish Toshin, I'm the Free Skeleton in Oakdale. I'm Marian Nihulawan. Good Marian. Did Luke O'Neill say he hopes his new programme would be the normal people of science programmes? He did say that. If so, I can't wait to see him in his birthday suit. And it really annoys me when my husband tells me he has put away the grocery shopping but leaves the plastic wrapping on everything. Lemons still in the net, apples in the cardboard tray. I think we need to relax a little bit about all those things. Maybe I'm wrong. It's time for our quiz of today. This week, we have a fantastic weekend breakaway to win, staying at one of the four exceptional Irish-owned Flynn hotels located across the country. The choice of hotels, well, you can go to the luxurious boutique-style Imperial Hotel in Cork City, the New Park Hotel in Kilkenny, set on 40 acres of beautiful parkland, the Old Ground Hotel in the heart of Ennis, or the Park Hotel in the scenic harbour town of Dungarvan. More details on flynnhotels.com. And on our quiz today, we have Breida Daly and Doreen Buckley. Hello, Breida.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello, Ray.
Good to talk to you. We were talking about y'all earlier on.
Yes.
And Matt Brooker's lovely calendar there that he's done for St. Vincent de Paul.
I'll be getting one myself.
Good stuff.
Lovely.
Good. Have you seen it? You've seen it around the town, have you?
I've seen it in the shops. Yeah.
Right.
It's lovely with lovely pictures.
Yeah. Are you out walking the dog or are you back?
Oh, no, I'm back because there's supposed to be heavy rain, but he wants to be included.
Does he? Right. Is he good at quizzes?
He is. He'll help me.
Right. So it's Bobby Joe, is it?
He's that backing. Bobby Joe, yeah.
What sort of dog is he?
He's supposed to be a Jack Russell, but he's not. He's a bit bigger.
Does he think he's a Jack Russell?
Yeah. Well, when we got him, my husband picked him out and he ran out first and he said they're the best. You know, there was other little pups as well, and he came out first and he liked him.
Right. So that's Bobby Joe. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're putting pictures into frames. It's a thing that I love doing. There's something lovely about putting pictures into frames.
Yeah, well, I moved house last year.
Right.
This time, Christmas last year, my husband died.
Ah.
And so I'm still working on.
Yeah.
I'm still working on it, and because I came from 4 bedrooms to a 2-bedroom house.
So you're downsizing.
Yeah.
And how are you? When did he die? What date?
Oh, he died. He'll be 4 years dead.
Ah, 4 years. On
Easter Monday.
Right.
But I lived out in the country about 5 miles from y'all, but now I'm only about 3 minutes from the main street.
Ah, great. That's a big change in your life then, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It'll never be the same without him, but, you know. It's hard.
And in moving,
to leave your home.
It is. In moving and downsizing and all the memories you would have had there, Breeder. But I suppose you had to be, did you, ruthless about some things? Did you have to leave behind you or what did you do?
Well, no, I'd want to bring everything.
Did you? Right, okay.
I nearly did bring everything, but as I said, I have records and we were in that house over 40 years.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you can imagine, you know,
all the stuff you accumulated. Yeah.
But I'm trying to fit it in now, and I'm at frames, and I'm doing different things, you know, putting things on the wall.
Okay.
But I moved in last year on the 19th of December.
Right. So you're nearly a year in there. How are you on the quizzes, yourself and Bobby Joe?
Good.
Good. Great. Well, okay.
But I hope they won't be too happy.
Well, we'll see what we can do. You're up against Doreen Buckley from Tubber between Moat and Clara in County Offaly. How are you doing, Doreen?
Hello, great.
Oh, hello, Doreen.
There you go.
Hello,
there's Breeda there. Yeah, everyone's saying hello to each other.
I'm good at decluttering, so she could take me
off. Oh, are you? Excuse me. Right. Why do you say you're good at decluttering?
I was always minimalist.
Were you? Always?
Yeah, always, yeah.
Right.
I'm supposed to have thrown out really good things in my earlier life.
Did you? Right.
There you go.
Yeah.
And it's just you don't like the clutter around.
I don't like clutter, and I don't like too many clothes.
Right. So you were.
Well, I like clothes, but not a lot of them.
Yes. So you were Marie Kondo before she existed.
I'd love to have done her job.
Yeah.
I'd love to be doing those decluttering programs on television.
There you go. Well,
I missed out.
Yeah. Well, it's never too late. Never too late.
Mrs. Hinchcaw, I think she's called, or somebody. Yeah.
I like your attitude because you're not letting the lockdown get you down.
Oh God, no. No, it's not taking the joy out of my life.
Yeah. So So you've a daily routine with your three friends.
I have a daily routine. I meditate in the mornings for about 5 minutes. And then I head off on a 5K walk with great neighbours. And we laugh a lot and we're distanced. And if it's a fine day, I bring a flask. I'm a big flask and a picnic person.
Right.
Now that we have no coffee shop, because we used to always go to somewhere for a coffee at the end of the thing. And I'm in a kind of a book club with them, but not a book club where you have to read a particular book.
You just talk about books in general.
And then we discuss the books.
Ah, yeah, that's a better idea, I think.
And then we switch them around.
Yes.
I don't like to be told what to read.
Yes,
so I wouldn't be
too prescriptive. Too prescriptive, yes. Yeah.
It wouldn't suit me. I was long enough being told what to do in my life.
Right.
I'm tired now. Retired as well, so I don't do it. I'm on at the moment is Never Mind the Bollocks, Here's the Science.
Yeah,
I love Luke O'Neill.
That's it.
I love him.
I love you. Listen, can I go over to your place for dinner? I'm just looking at what's on the menu.
It's very easy. It was on the Today programme. I record the Today programme and then I run through it at night to see what they're doing in the cooking.
Right, so tell us what you're making tonight.
I'm doing baked haddock with sun-dried tomatoes and runner beans and peppers and butternut squash.
Nice. And for dessert?
For dessert, it's baked apples, so ordinary cooking apples.
Yeah.
And you take out the middle, core the apple, I think that's the word.
Yes, it is.
But don't put the yolk through the whole apple. Right. And then fill the apple with, well, I'm using Marks and Spencer's mincemeat that's out for Christmas. So I'm filling the apple with that.
Yeah, the sweet mincemeat as opposed to beef. Yeah.
Oh, yes, the sweet mince. Oh, God, yeah. And cinnamon and some maple syrup.
Right. Brida, you and I are off to Doreen's now for dinner. That sounds delicious.
Yeah. I'll go down and do Lady Suffering.
Right.
Good luck, Doreen.
Right. You as well.
Okay. So five questions each. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If we're a draw situation, we go to a tie break. Okay, let's get a bit of tension going. And we go to question number one for Brida Daly in Yall. Brida, on this day in 1942, US troops occupied the airport of Port Lyote in Morocco. What we want to know is, on what continent is Morocco?
North Africa.
Is the correct answer. And for you, Doreen, on this day in 1945, General Enver Hoxha became leader of Albania. On what continent is Albania? Is PJ shouting at you there? Yeah,
Europe
is the correct answer. Yes, yeah. PJ got it right there. Okay, question number two for you, Brida, is an audio one. Have a listen to this.
I'm up here, you morons. Come and get me. You guys give up or you're thirsty for more.
Okay. On this day in 1990, that John Hughes film directed by Chris Columbus and starring Macaulay Culkin premiered in Chicago. Can you name the movie?
Oh, God. Is it one of the ones he usually had?
Yes.
What was that called? I remember seeing it.
Yeah, big Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Any idea?
Was it Home Alone?
It was Home Alone. Well done. Yeah, from the recesses of your brain. Okay. Doreen, your question is this.
How are you going to catch all these fishes without a fishing pole?
Oh, you see, I call them. I have this special fish call, and they come right into the boat.
Okay, on this day in 1969, which TV show featuring Bert and Ernie, Cookie Monster and Big Bird premiered on PBS TV in the US?
That was a clip from it.
Bertie and Ernie.
Sesame Street, was it?
Yes, it was Sesame Street. Yes, there you go.
Well done,
Brida.
Thanks, Brida.
Yeah, you know Doreen's answers as well. Great. Okay, question number three for you, Brida. On this day in 2012, the final US presidential election results were declared after Barack Obama won Florida to defeat Mitt Romney 332-206 in electoral college votes. On what island state was Barack Obama born?
Hawaii.
Is the correct answer. Well done. Doreen, on this day in 1965, the famous Mannequin Peace statue was stolen from its site in which Belgian city? The Mannequin Peace. Belgian city.
Brussels.
It's the correct answer. Well done.
Oh, God, that's a chance.
Yeah, you're sort of half flying through it. Okay.
Yeah, I'm struggling.
Brida, audio one for you. Have a listen. So I say a little prayer, hope my dreams will take me there. So on this day in the year 2000, that song was number one. Can you name that Irish band? Irish. Take a guess.
Yeah.
Any idea? No?
No, I can't.
It's Westlife. That's Westlife there.
Oh,
okay.
Lord.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah, now that you hear it.
Yeah.
Okay, for you, Doreen, have a listen. So on this day in 1998, that song was number one. Can you name the singer?
I think it was Cher.
Yeah, Cher is the correct answer. Okay, so Brida, you're on three. Doreen, you're on four. So this is a question you need to get right, Brida.
Yeah.
On this day in 1970, Charles de Gaulle died at age 79. Which country was he president of?
France.
Is the correct answer. Well done. So you're on four. Doreen, you're on four as well. But if you answer your final question correctly, then you are the winner. So here it is. If not, we go to a tiebreak situation. On this day in 1938, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk died of cirrhosis of the liver at age 57. Which country was he the first president of? Mustafa Kemal Atatürk.
Turkey, I think.
Turkey is the correct answer. Yeah. Well done.
Wow.
Wow, you two were good. You two are very close.
Yeah. I knew that one as well. Yeah.
Did you?
Did you know that one? Oh. Yeah.
Frida, you're great fun. We're going to send you out a mug to add to your clutter, a Ray Darcy Show mug.
Thanks, Ray.
And make sure you put it in a position of prominence.
I will, Ray. And I hope you'll come back on television with your programme, which is very good.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks very much, Frida.
I thought she was talking about my programme.
Mind yourself, Frida. See you. Bye.
Thanks very much. Bye,
now.
Bye, Ray.
Bye. And Doreen, you're off to any one of the four Flynn hotels around the country. The Imperial Hotel in Cork, New Park Hotel, the Old Ground Hotel in Ennis, or the Park Hotel in Dungarvan. The choice
is
yours.
And I'm going to bring one of my lovely sisters with me.
You'll have to do a draw for that, or else you'll offend.
I'll tell you now, I'm going to bring Trace Doyle. She lives in Kilcool.
Okay, there it is. You've said it on air. It's going to happen.
And
we'll see you on the telly when you get your programme about decluttering.
About decluttering. I was on the telly before doing programmes, but it wasn't about decluttering.
Right, well, I'm afraid to ask you what it was about, because...
It was about baby on board.
Oh, right, that was you. Right, okay. Doreen, lovely to talk to you. Well done. And we'll see you.
Well,
we'll
Ray.
Talk again. See you now. Bye. Bye.
Brilliant.
Bye. Bye.
Thank
bye.
You.
Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Cliona's been on. She says, love those two powerful and fun women and give them a TV show of their own. The new Marie Kondo. That's Breda and Doreen. I love their company as well. I love doing the quiz and talking to people. It's great. Now, seemingly, we've just seen a tweet there from Paul Cunningham in the RTE newsroom, and he says government clarifies that a phone call between the Taoiseach and US President-elect Joe Biden is being arranged. An earlier tweet sent by Mr. Martin this afternoon was sent in error. So there you go. Ooga chaka, ooga, ooga, ooga chaka. There you go. As promised, for Eldon Connor, who's listening to us in San Francisco, or just north of San Francisco, that's Blue Swede and Hooked on a Feeling. And they're in season now, aren't they? Swedes, turnips, yeah. I tell you, a man who'd know the answer to that question is Colm O'Gorman, because not only is he now Executive Director of Amnesty in Ireland, but he's a food columnist with the Irish Examiner. How are you doing, Colm?
Hey, Ray, how are you?
Turnips are in season, are they?
They are. They are indeed, yeah.
Yes. And what's the difference between a Swede and a turnip?
Now you're asking me. I don't think there's any difference at all, Ray. At least not in my house there wasn't. They
right.
both looked the same and you did the same things.
Yeah. Congratulations. You're sort of, would it be fair to say, an accidental food columnist?
Yeah, I have to say I'm thrilled with it. It's a lovely thing to have happened. You remember I was on with you a few months ago because I started doing this Corona cooking thing online,
yes.
where just to kind of keep myself and everybody else going a bit through the original shutdown, the lockdown, I started tweeting a recipe every day and there was just a huge reaction to it. From all over the place, from all over Ireland, but often around the world. A lot of the stuff just went viral, as they say, which is not a good thing in a pandemic, maybe. But the Examiner then asked me, could they run a couple of recipes? And I found myself on the same pages with fantastic people I've admired for years, like Darina Allen and Nevin Maguire. And one day I was there with the Happy Pair lads,
right.
Manically on the other side of the page, away from the other side of me there. And that was fantastic. That was brilliant. But they had such a lovely reaction to that they asked me, would I do a weekly food column? So I'm now a food columnist.
Congratulations.
Which is wonderful. Yeah. I'm delighted. I'm thrilled. It's lovely to have it as an outlet, to be honest.
Yeah. I remember the last time we spoke, you were slightly annoying because you were heading off to fashion some milk and lemon into a cheese for dinner or something like that. And I could hear everybody around the country going,
would
you go away?
Down a little bit?
Would you go
away?
I was
tossing some lemon juice into some boiled milk. And the result of that is if you put it in a bit of muslin, you end up with cheese. That's as complicated as it gets.
Yeah, because we were analysing it. You live in sort of rural Wexford, do you? So you don't have access to, you know, fancy shops like they have in Dublin.
I mean, the most I've done during the restriction of the shutdown was have some spices couriered to me from Asia, from the Asian supermarket
right.
in town. And that,
right.
and that was about it. That was just once. But everything else, I mean, most of the things that I've been cooking and posting, they're things that... I've tried to come up with recipes and create recipes that people can do quickly and easily and might be excited by, but always using ingredients that they'll find locally easily enough in their supermarket,
right.
even during the restrictions, and that they'll be able to cook really quickly and simply at home. So that's been the whole idea.
This time next year, I'm going to be interviewing you about your new book. I guarantee.
That may well happen, Ray.
I see. Have you always been a foodie, Colm?
I have. I mean, I'm very lucky. I grew up in a house where my mum was really passionate about food and was kind of really creative, but into really fresh, interesting food. I mean, this was, I grew up in on a farm in rural Wexford, and in the 1970s, when coleslaw was exotic, she was making hummus at home. It was that kind of thing. So, like, I've never been frightened of or intimidated by food, and we grew up eating lots of different things, so she got excited by it. But the thing that drives me, Ray, is I think we create an awful lot of, I don't know, drama around food. Like, we somehow seem to suggest that it's alchemy or nuclear physics to get a plate of food onto a table. And I think that puts people off.
Yeah.
And actually, what I'm all about is just getting people excited about the dinner that they can make, that they can sit down with their family and enjoy, and that it's fun and possible and easy. I think people are intimidated out of cooking new or different things these days because we're meant to believe, as I said, that it's some sort
but
of...
But you have an obvious talent. Just from speaking to you about it. And you were on Celebrity MasterChef, were you?
Mm.
I do
remember it. I loved it. It was a great experience. But you see, the thing that I learned there, more than anything else, from a Michelin star chef of all things, was to just don't get intimidated by something. Really, what you're doing is you're taking some food ingredients and you're applying a particular technique to it. You're grilling it, you're frying it, you're roasting it. Understand what you're doing. And then just take it step by step and you'll be grand.
Yeah.
And the key thing that I learned was to think about what you want to eat. Play with it, experiment it, have fun with it. Don't even worry necessarily about whether it looks the prettiest thing on a plate. Just as long as it tastes good and as long as you have fun making it, that's the way to approach cookery as far as I'm concerned.
This might seem like a mad question, but have you found sanctuary in cooking over the years? Is it something that's sort of mindfulness? No.
Yeah, well, I don't know about mindfulness. I mean, it's a great switch off. I mean, during the first lot of the restrictions, you know, because I've been working at home remotely full time since the 16th of March. So, you know, you come down and you spend 7 or 8 hours on video conference calls and in emails and getting your head out of it by going out for a quick run and then coming back and thinking about creating something in the kitchen. It's so different to what I normally do that it was a great switch off. But it's a great outlet. But the thing for me about food is, I mean, I think I'm going to sound terribly pretentious here and there, but I think putting a plate of food in front of somebody that you've cooked for them is an act of love, right?
Yeah.
The great kick for me of seeing somebody tuck into a plate of food that I've cooked is to see them enjoy it and get sustenance from it. That's the joy. And then
There's nothing pretentious about that. Sure, I got that last night.
That's what it's about for me, you know.
When I put a plate of pasta in front of Jenny and she loved it.
Yeah.
It was just with tomatoes and olives and a bit of fresh pesto and chili and anchovies, and she gobbled it up. Yeah, lovely.
Perfect. And sometimes the simplest things are the best things, aren't they?
Are you saying that's simple? No, no. What have people responded to?
Let's not mention sourdough, Ray?
Go on. What have people responded to most over the last
while? Loads of things. I mean, everything from the bread that I was on with you previously about people went mad for muffins. I mean, in the early days of it, I was posting things that, you know, recipes that I just developed over the years and were staples at home, like, you know, blueberry pancakes or these gorgeous lemon and blueberry muffins that I did. And then I did loads of varieties of that. But lots of things. I mean, I tried to also do stuff that was healthy without being too kind of self-righteous about it. So there was a dish that I did once, and that's a bit irregular at home as well, and it's baked salmon with pesto, peppers, asparagus, tomato and parmesan. I mean, you just take a few fillets of salmon, skinless of fillets of salmon, pop your oven on to 180 degrees, put the salmon on a baking tray and add the juice of half a lemon, seize it with salt and pepper.
Yes.
Cut up some tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, pepper and asparagus, toss them in a little olive oil and put them over the salmon, and then put a bit of pesto onto the salmon, and then bake it for 15 minutes until the salmon is cooked, and that's it.
Right.
Just plate it up with a little bit more fresh pesto and some fresh parmesan on it, and you'll have a fantastic, tasty, super healthy meal in less than half an hour.
We'll put that up there.
It doesn't get simpler than that.
People may not be able to get to it for this evening, but they might consider doing it tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll tweet it out there now, and I'm sure you can throw it up as well.
Yeah. So it's every Friday in the Irish Examiner.
Who'd have thunk?
Who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk it? Colm O'Gorman, new food columnist. You have to get the N in there, food columnist. That's brilliant. Well done. And I look forward to the book as well. Yourself. And when we get to the other side of this thing, you might come in and we'll have a longer chat about things.
That'd be brilliant.
Thanks
a million, Ray. Mind yourself.
Thanks, Colin. Mind yourself and family. That's it from us. Lovely comments coming in about Colin there. And there's more bad habits, but we won't end on a negative. That's it from us. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Carmuck and Sarah are on the way. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.